2003 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents Session 151, Healing Islam for Mothers, Healing Islam from a Muslim, a paper presented by Terry Kirgay, with a response by Jay Banerichi.
I'd like to welcome everybody back from lunch. Hope you had a good one. My name is John Remy. I'm a volunteer here at Sunstone. I'm very excited to introduce our speakers for today. Mr. Tariq Kirgay was born in Iraq. 45 years ago, he came here to Utah to study civil engineering at the University of Utah as well as at Utah State University. He is a Muslim. He met his wife Sandra here, and together they raised their children here in Utah as well. He will be presenting to us his impressions of his sojourn among the people here of Utah. After hearing his impressions, we'll hear from Professor Bonner Ritchie. Dr. Ritchie is a retired BYU professor, and he's a member of the Sunstone Board of Directors, and has been involved in, has had a long time involvement in Middle East Eastern affairs, so we'll get to hear from him as well. After we hear from the two of them in that order, you're welcome to field any questions to the two of them that you might have. So thank you very much, and Mr. Kruger.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, and all praises and thanks for all the blessing He bestowed upon us. Actually, more than 45 years ago, a young boy, myself, leaving the oldest civilization, Mediterranean, Middle East, Babylon. And within a few hours flying, here I am in Salt Lake City, then taking Greyhound bus, and I'm in Logan. I look around from the desert of the Arabia, old countries and life and background, to newest. When I look around, beautiful mountain and greeneries and people very nice and so, I thought that was Brigadoon. I still do. The time was such that you didn't lock your door, go and buy a grocery. You just go to the store, and they, if you don't have money with you, they just tell you which bank you deal with, and they give you a check. They give you a blank check, and you sign it and go and buy. And I might add to that, the moral was such. Maybe this explained it. A lady wrote, she was raised in a farm, of the time. She said when she was in the farm, they had cattle and so forth. Their parents, when they talk about, they would not let them use, if they had to talk about the male cow, they had to say cow gentleman. This was the life. So when I say I thought it was Brigadoon, I mean it. And it, I have much wonderful memories of it. It took to my attention, which I didn't expect, how much religion and belief is respected. And people believe, and they study, and they learn, they go to church. Because our ideas from the Middle East, those people left religion and Hollywood and what have you, and so forth. And in a way, we look back to see what we have, because we didn't study much there. And I might say in the United States I start, I had a good background, come from a family, my grandfather was prayers and attend and so forth, and I start studying Islam. And to explain to you, maybe this is the first time this organization invited a Muslim or not, I might have to say that we have to go back, if you want really benefit, to take certain prejudice, hate, 9/11, how it dropped like a bomb and hijacked Islam and so forth, to say today we're just gonna listen. Hopefully we learn something from a Muslim itself, because so much in this media and TV and newspaper and Time magazine prejudice. And if we look at history, we see many parallels. If I tell you this is a good thing, but say, well, how come so many people feel it is bad? We see that in history, that great people, what great prophets, they've been prosecuted, killed, hanging the cross as you believe and so forth. And on contrast, we see bad people being praised, clapped, put on the pedestal. The first example, we might say Jesus. The second example, we say Hitler and Lenin and so forth. So this happened, unfortunately, to Islam, that the media is coming so strong for whatever agenda they have and whatever good they interpreted in a bad way, and this could happen to human beings. So hopefully what I tell you, what I explain, what I talk about, this is my belief. Take it for what is worth, but it is very sincere that I believe. Islam is continuation of the great religion of the world. The Prophet, as we believe in Muhammad, his descendant comes from Abraham. And there's a beautiful book written, and this was actually by a ordained minister. This is the book by name, Abraham, the Friend of God, by Gerald Dirks. Very much he studied, he was ordained minister, so I guess he got his PhD from Harvard, those, and also he went to Middle East, traveled, studied Islam, and compared and wrote this book. Very much agrees how it began, who is Abraham and his son Ismail and Isaac and so on and so forth. If somebody is interested, I recommend, this is a very good book to read in that. And yet there are statements in Bible saying that there will be from their descendant prophets and so forth. And there are some other scholars very much went through Bible and picked those out. If we have an open mind in reading it, we will see, well, maybe this is what they meant. They meant Islam, they meant Muhammad, because he's the descendant. All the signs are there. And there are books written quite even on that. When Islam came, Arabia, Middle East, that area was extremely in darkness. Islam introduced the following. First, learning. Islam extremely emphasized, and the first word was revealed is read. And also our Prophet says, learning, seeking knowledge is a compulsory on male and female. So Islam extremely emphasized learning. And we could see, this was about late 6th century, around 7th century, that the whole world changed. At the time there was ignorance, darkness, they start thinking and using knowledge. Islam introduced or emphasized the dignity of human being. That great thing that God created is this human being, and everything in universe is subservient to this human being. Because before that, in different cultures, even today, if some of you travel to India, I was in India 2-3 years ago and went to some place, they told me a lady was there. I was wondering, they say she's worshipping a tree and different things. Islam came with this human being, everything created for his servant. He is a superior to the trees, to the wind, to the sky, to the sun. And another thing, that God's greatest creation, that human, he give them a thinking. The word is aql, or mind, ability to reason. And one human has to be convinced. It is not just okay, it is compulsory to use his brain, to think, to analyze, to distinguish, to decide. In fact, in Islam, almost the faith is not accepted until he is convinced. There's no compulsion. contrary to so many Islam spread by sword and killing, and I'll come to that too if there'll be time. But it led to human being. And that's why in the Muslim, the books, the jurisprudence and the thing, there are so many questions. Minute. What happened if a piece of bread falls down? What Islam says about? Could you pick it up and eat it or put it back? How you clean up yourself? The prayer, the fasting, and different things and so forth. That because it respects the mind. And continuously, if you read the Muslim book, Quran, they see the statement. Don't they think? Don't they contemplate? Don't they use their brain? Don't they ask? Don't continuously the theme that tells you that you have a great thing God give you, use it. It is your obligation to use the mind and the brain. And with that comes the reasoning. You have to be convinced. Probably from that point on, somebody become a Muslim, hardly could, and missionaries and so forth, they go, sometimes they change, they leave because economic and difficulties and wars and problem to come here. But to convince him, it is very difficult. That he should become. There are other reasons, because Muslim to start with, he believes in Jesus, so you cannot add more to it. Islam respects all the other beliefs. And like I say, when I make this statement, some say, well, this isn't what we read, this isn't what we see, but I bring facts with it. The fact that there are many Christians, many Jews, and Muslims ruled India 700-800 years. They could have converted everybody, just like it happened in Spain. They killed the Muslims and they cannot believe, but Muslims left him alone because it is the duty. They cannot force somebody to leave it. And it is from the same point when they say a Muslim man could marry a non-Muslim, a Christian or a Jew, but vice versa is not allowed. And sometimes people ask why that doesn't seem fair, because the Muslim man cannot force his wife to change religion. And I'm an example. When I got married, my wife was from this area, she wasn't a Muslima, and she stayed with her religion until she decided to change. I could not tell her, now you have to. And I have examples on the contrary. Even in Salt Lake City, there was a fellow who went in army, married a girl from Turkey. When they come back, then he tell her, you have to change your religion to mine or I'll divorce you. And it happened, divorce, because that's what he wanted. So this is from the point that you cannot force people to believe it. And Muslims, through their history, never did. And that's why other religions are there. In fact, so much so, even in Jerusalem, other places, the churches stayed under the Muslim, because the Christian and the Jews, they said, if you people take care of it, avoid lots of problems and difficulties, and they were in charge of it, but it was open continuously for them. Two words very important, one in Christianity, one in Islam. In Christianity, the word they very much emphasize, and I might say in a little bit I have difficulty with it, is love. It is love, God is love, Jesus love, 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 love. And in Islam, the word equal to that, that very much emphasized, is justice, fairness. And we, again, when we read the Quran, it says, be fair, even if it is against yourself, against your family, be fair. And I will be reading some of the same of Prophet Muhammad. He says that you have to be fair if you are angry or not, whenever, continuously, because we believe God will judge you later if you've been unfair in everything that one does in life. And I believe the word mentioned in Quran more than the name God, Allah, is fairness and being fair and being just. For a Muslim life, and I've been said like pillars of Islam, the five pillar or so, one of them to believe, and this is the creed, the belief that you believe there's one creation to this universe, God, Allah, God, is the same, and Muhammad is one of his prophets among many others prophets. When you say that and you believe in that, actually you become a Muslim, because many times they ask how I become a Muslim. I say it is between you and your creator. In Islam there is no intercession. It is not somebody else you have to go through. There is no mediary. In fact, it's almost like a sin if I say I cannot talk to go to God unless I go through this guy or that lady or whatever. It's you directly talk to your creator, because created all of us and we are all his servant. The second one is the prayer, which a Muslim supposed to offer 5 times a day. Just before the sunrise, after the dawn, and about the noon, and between noon and sunset, and the sunset, and when it is dark. It's wonderful that all went with the sun. You almost didn't need a watch. In the olden days, they didn't have it. They just went, the dawn came, that was one time, and they put a stick up. When the shadow is twice its length, that's noon. When shadow is the length of the stick is noon, then when the shadow is double is the afternoon, and so forth. So this person has to come 5 times a day to his prayer. And praying is not just asking God and so, but it is bowing, and you have to wash and clean up and so forth, and offer that. You are all out. I offered my noon prayer just in the back. Nobody was here, because that was one of the times that we have to pray. And this is really wonderful, because it brings people back to serenity, to humbleness, to remember that this is a temporary life, especially in the United States, when you see so much in the West, or just hurried life, maybe in New York, different places, so much nervous breakdown and tensions and difficulties and so forth, to bring this human back. And remember God, remember creation, remember temporary life, remember life hereafter and so forth, it very much humbles him. And there have been some study when you bow and you put your head down, almost like a discharge, whatever tension build up. Maybe it's a position of a human. Some study been done about this one. I remember a couple of 2-3 years ago, maybe most of you read about it, somebody was suggesting. They don't have the Islam, but still they try to come make sense of things. You say you should have a little corner in your house, clean it up, meditate. And they found out if you go there and just repeat a word, you feel a little serenity. Like if you sit down in a corner and just say monkey, 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 you feel better. So how about if you say, oh God, I'm grateful, my life is okay, I'm happy with it, bless me more, protect my loved one, then even one feels much more. And those are the ones a Muslim supposed to do, the ones who obey the rules. The third one is fasting. And Muslims supposed to fast 1 month in the year, from dawn to dusk. And in summer, and it is almost about 17, 18 hours. In winter, the year comes the fasting month. It's shorter, maybe 12, 13 hours. He doesn't eat, he doesn't drink, and there's no husband-wife relation at the time in those. And that has many benefit, even the doctors, as you know, it is kind of a, what they call when people don't want to eat, or, so it lowers sugar diabetes, it's lower high blood pressure, it just breaks the habit. It's been said that human eat during the day hours, and that's 1 month you eat during the night hour. You have one meal and you could have drinks and so forth until the dawn. And that helps, especially if one really kind of get indulged and they go about the system. For myself, I'm a coffee drinker. That month I just stay away from the coffee. I just lose desire even to drink it at night and so forth. So I suppose this is very good. And also among its benefit, you know what it means when they say somebody is hungry. Because unless if somebody been hungry, they never know when they say how life is in Africa, in the rest, and China, and those places, because God blessed us in the United States, we have plenty. And maybe that's why the children sometimes they rebel, and the hamburger is no good, and the meatloaf is no good, they just seeking, because they never really been hungry in a way, and I hope we never have, because it's awful when you are hungry and you don't have enough to eat. And even in the United States, the people who went through depression and different things, they appreciate how God blessed us here and bestowed upon us. The fourth one is paying part of one's wealth, income, whatever he has, to be used for the needy, for the poor, and so forth. But in Islam, this is part of it is obligatory. It is like a tax. If you make so much, you pay that much to go to those helps. And you could do much more. Charities is very much encouraged. And some of you might say, well, Middle East and so forth, and I'm just talking about Islam as a religion, not necessarily about the Muslims or what those countries and difficulties and poverties and other things they go through it. And the fifth in those pillar is one who could afford it to go to a pilgrimage to Hajj, Mecca, once in a lifetime, when he could afford it. It's not obligatory if you cannot borrow money for it. In fact, you have to have saving and extra money to do that. And that's a big gathering for Muslims to gather from all over the world to meet, to do trading if they wanted to be part of it. And also for men, they have a special clause, and for those who've been, almost you have to be a Muslim to be there and go to Hajj and so forth. And I had the good fortune to be able, you see 2-3 million people there, and men just wear a kind of a sheet. It really reminds you in a miniature, like a day of judgment, how human is. We've got people praying, crying, asking God forgiveness, and we are all human. The God is God of all of us. I have some minute before you ask the question to share with you. I know this will lead even to the question and answer, but I still share with you. They did a study in the United States, I believe, that if you ask, say, about 100,000 American in different parts, what they think of Islam, or what's their objection to Islam, or what are their questions, and if you bring all those questions in and put it together, make 10 out of it, this will be what people ask. This was an article I collected. However, I don't want to preempt your question. After that, you feel free to ask, or my colleague here will do. The first one they asked those people, they said Islam is a very militant religion. This is what their objection is to it. Yesterday, I was watching TV, they said weapons, especially in Africa. He was saying a K-47, K-41, apparently some kind of a machine gun. In Africa, they sell it for $6. And you could see pictures of African with those machine guns and weapons and so forth, and hardly they have food to eat. Then he said about those toys, machine guns and bazookas and grenades and so forth, there are about $500 billion out there. And I might dare to say, and absolutely I stand to be corrected, not even 2% of it made in the Muslim country. When we talk about militant, when talk about killing, true, they get killed, they get dropped on them, and they fight back. But we have to ask, why are they making so much? I mean, just like you go to Africa, you see two people, they're having a little fist fight. And they say, oh, they are ignorant, they have knowledge, fist fight. But you give each one of them a machine gun. You say, now go for it. And you go and buy, so, well, I sold it, I made money. So almost the condition of the world is like that. And we could go many of this when they say it is militant. Yesterday, they arrested two people, I believe in Oregon and therefore in Utah, because they took some explosives and put it someplace for a month in a house in Oregon. Anybody heard about it? It was in the paper. Nobody heard about it? Yeah? Okay. Do you know what's their religion? She doesn't know. They never say it, unless if the name was Muhammad or Ali. They're not just the Solicitor Tribune and Deseret and others will write it. It will be news in England and France and the rest of the world. So from that point, what the poor Muslims do, I'm praying to God. I mean, they charge the atmosphere, so they try to bomb, they try to kill, they're going to blow up things in a mall. If something happened, I don't know what they're going to do to me. And actually, if you be realistic, like in Salt Lake, especially the Muslims who go to mosque and they pray, they are really very peaceful people. I mean, I sometimes ask our little group, we go 100 people Fridays, we pray. Anybody here goes to hunting? No. Anybody has a gun? No. Do you even have a knife? No. And we don't even get close to that. But media for whatever. I have another article which was written in 1994. Yeah. And this is from US News and World Report or USA Today. I have the article here. He say in the United States, every year, small or big, there is about 34 million crime. If out of those, five of them done by a Muslim, right away, he was a black Muslim. He was a Muslim, his name was Muhammad, this was his church. The rest, nothing. So, unfortunately, you don't associate, because you hear crime happened, rape happened, this, glass and all that. A guy was killing people and eating them. What was his religion? Nobody knows, because he was not a Muslim. And so forth. So, unfortunately, when they say it is a militant, is that. Because those two people, and you will see it tomorrow in the paper, because they just arrested them. They are from Utah. They took some explosive. That was his name was Muhammad. If that was me, my picture, my family, my little mosque or church would have been all over. See, we are worried about it. He was trying to blow up something. And here, that's the end of it. Second, this is again, I'm going to the article. I still have time to finish it. It says, Muslims worship a different God. And that is so absurd. I mean, it was so strange. How they think about that? I'm just like, you are in Himalayas and say, well, it's been said, it is, maybe it's not a joke, but say people in Utah have three heads. Because God or Allah, it is a different language, which is actually Elohim. It goes back to even the original in Bible that that's the God. And Muslims say, I worship my creator. What will be more clear than that? And the Christian, the Jews who lived in Middle East, live there, and Far East, and Turkey, and Iran. When they worship, they worship, they say Allah. They don't say God, capital G-O-D. So that's what they worship, the Christians. And here is somebody come here and say they worship a different God. It's very crazy and very strange, and but it comes in the media. That Islam spread by sword, by fight, by convert, by force. And first majority of Muslims from India to China to Philippines and all those Malaysia and Indonesia, those historically never ever been fight. It was just by merchants when they go there and missionaries and so forth. And even now, in spite of the Muslims, and this is a big statement I'm making, with all our confusion, with all our background, with our country being in difficulty, with the dictators we suffer from, they say Islam is the fastest growing religion, not just there, in the United States, in the West, in France. So who forces them? And how come they don't go back? Leave it, there's no force. and I just mentioned many things. We came to the United States because we have freedom. We learn more about Islam. We study more about Islam, and many more people get to know about Islam. So, for my advantage point, it never did. There have been wars, there have been difficulties, but the three, once I heard Paul Harvey talk about it, Muhammad waged three bloody wars, and I know which three he means. Probably our colleague here who will do those three wars at his time, Badr, Uhud, and Khandaq. All those three was next to Medina because he inaugurated. In fact, he left Mecca, he went to Medina, and the other people are attacking him. If you read history, all those three he was defending. And in one of them, they called Khandaq, in Arabic means a trench, he dig a trench around Medina so there won't be bloodshed. And when they talk about three bloody war at his time, total of it, maybe 200 people got killed. Maybe 300. It wasn't dropping a bomb and about 5,000 people getting killed, and like last century when they say it was the bloodiest century in human history, 120 million people got killed. Human, Second War, First War, Korean War, Vietnam War, all the other. And you could see actually Muslims were not in any of those. They were, if anything, in the receiving end, that the bomb is dropping on them, if it be in Kashmir, in being Afghanistan and different places and so on and so forth. Another point, that Muslims are the Arabs. Well, Arabs are very minority, actually. In just probably in India and China alone, there are more Muslims than Arabs all put together, and then Indonesia and Malaysia. So Muslims are not Arabs. It appeared, as you believe in Middle East, and also Moses and Jesus and many prophets came from that area, but not they are Arab. Another in the same line, many people, apparently again I'm talking about this article in United States, they say the Muslims are that Afro-American, at the time used the word blacks, that's what they are. This is another question, start with Elijah Muhammad, then his son and so forth came to the true Islam, but if they are Muslims, they are Muslims, whatever, anybody could become a Muslim, but those are also compared to the rest of the world is very small group. Another point they object to it, of course, probably you will laugh, but it has a reason that Muslims marry four wives. And this comes up quite a bit, and sometimes compared to Mormonism and so on and so forth. Actually, in Islam, and I will a little bit elaborate on it, when Prophet Muhammad came before him, there was no limit. Anyone could have 20, 30, 50, 100, I mean there are some biblical stories, so many hundreds of wives they had. Islam limited it. He said not more than four, and when there's a reason. It is a social need at some time when most of men killed or woman is more, what to do? And a good example comes to my mind, I say, suppose you have an island. There is about 100 men in it and 300 women. And that's all they have to live. What is the solution? You go ask the most wise people, because this is a reality of life. I think in the United States for senior is about 2 to 1, maybe even more, female to male. Somehow they live longer, and that's how it is. And for professor being BYU and so, they say that ratio of girls is more to the boys and so, but reality of life, wars and destruction and shorter life, whatever. So it is to solve a social problem. And I think there was a book written by a lawyer. I don't remember the second woman that she says there, this is American female don't deserve a full husband because there isn't enough to go around. So Islam has a solution to this drama when situation is such that you have to solve it. But majority, they have just one wife, they live with it and so forth, and there are many other conditions. Which one? That just anything doesn't make sense now makes sense, that when he gets married, she could condition on the husband that he wouldn't marry another one. And I do perform marriage. Just because of my age, not my knowledge, somehow I'm one of the elder ones here and so forth, that she says, well, I don't accept it, and so forth. But at least everybody honest in the marriage and so forth. And if somebody had a question, we could elaborate a little more on that one. The other point, that Muhammad invented Islam. And actually, Islam as we believe it, means submission to the will of God, that we believe all the prophets were Muslim. The son is Muslim because they submit to the power of God. And the word itself came from Abraham, as our holy book telling us, because it's continuation. And it mentioned in our book, we believe in all the prophets, we respect them, we love them, we mention them in our prayer. The other point is that they treat women very badly. And when we read Quran and saying of Prophet Muhammad, actually women put in a pedestal extremely well. Because after all, when you say woman, who is a woman? It's either your daughter or your wife or your mother or your aunt or your sister. It is not somebody stranger. And those are very much cherished. In Islam, you might tell me, I went to Saudi Arabia, they were treating women bad and this, and I don't deny that. But those are very strong culture and tradition, and this macho, we do see that. And probably you see it in different parts or early Christians and so on and so forth. But as a mother, a Muslim feels, and it's been said as the same Prophet Muhammad, that the gates of heaven is under the feet of your mother. You have to have your mother be pleased with you. And my father used to tell me, kiss your mother's feet. That's ultimate humbleness you show. So God will be pleased with you. And so much this like that. And also say if you have two daughters and you raise them and teach them and they get them married, God reward you with heaven, with paradise, which is the ultimate dream. So it is unfortunately the culture, the tradition, some do, but it's not Islam. Islam gave rights to women to own, to have, to hold. At the time, woman was sold, she could not have wealth, she could not be in business and so forth. Then, in fact, it was until almost a century. Sometime, they said in England, one could sell his wife. I see bits and pieces in paper here and there that they're trying to change those and so forth. Because Islam told us that they are from the same. There is no one preferred over the other. When God created, we are all from Adam, and Adam is from the clay of this earth. The last one I will do, and I know the time is gone, that Muslims don't believe in Jesus. And this is far from truth. We believe in the virgin birth, we believe Mary. Not just that, the only female name mentioned in Holy Book Quran is Maryam, Mary, mother of Jesus. And I have another book, which is The Cross and the Crescent by John Dirks. Very much, this was also an ordained minister. He wrote it, that I like you to buy it and read it and so far mention that. In fact, I think either here or someplace else said, he said Muslims in their writing, Quran, praise Mary more than Christian than in Bible. And that's in our holy book. Well, I'll stop here and I'll turn the time to other and the ones on your question. I'll be glad to try to answer. Thank you.
I appreciate the opportunity to share the session with Tariq. I'm honored to be part of the discourse on Islam. I'm not an expert on Islam. I'm not an expert on anything. I just sort of wander around making comments and observations. But I have had the opportunity of living about 5 years in the Islamic world, and
I've had a little experience in some areas that I would like to share just briefly. First of all, Tarek said that he was giving his perspective, his personal perspective. I think that's important. I'm giving my perspective of a Mormon living in an Islamic setting and reflecting on Islam and dealing with some of those issues. So it is idiosyncratic. It is a very private perspective. Is abroad, and without question, the most hospitable and friendly place I have ever lived in all my life is Amman, Jordan. The hospitality, the friendship, the support is incredible. And just two short examples. One, on one occasion, I needed some money. On many occasions I needed money, but on this particular occasion I had a check in dinars, in Jordanian dinars. And the dinar exchange rate at the time was, about 1.4. About 0.7 on the conversion. So I had a check for 1,000 dinars. And I needed dollars. And so it should have been about 1,400 U.S. dollars. So I took my check to the, I'd never go to a bank, again, part of the culture, I'd go to my favorite money changer, and Aladdin was not there. And so I, one of his assistants, I gave the check, and it was close to closing time, late afternoon, and he gave me the money, and I just grabbed it, put it in my pocket, and ran. And when I got to my apartment that evening, I discovered that I had 1,000, I had a couple of bills to pay in dollars and rent, and I'd paid some money, but I realized I'd gotten $1,000 instead of 1,000 dinars, instead of $1,400 for the 1,000 dinars. And so I went back, the money changer was closed, I went back the next day, and Aladdin was there, and I said, gee, I wonder if you saw the check, the receipt for the money or something. I said, but I had a check for 1,000 dinars and I only got $1,000. I should have had 1,400. And he looked at me with those probing eyes and he says, if you say you only got $1,000, then you only got $1,000. He counted out $400 and gave it to me. And I said, well, you know, evidence, documents, forms, shake hands, and go. Now, I've never had an American banker who would take my word that I got cheated out of $400. But Aladdin trusted me. He knew me, and he trusted me, and he honored that. Another occasion, one time we were riding in a service, a group taxi from the bridge, the King Hussein Bridge if you're on the Jordan side, or the Allenby Bridge if you're on the west side. And there was an older woman that was returning to her home, and she'd been visiting family in Palestine. And she had one of these huge sacks of figs that she was taking back. And we go up the hill from the Jordan Valley from 1,400 feet below sea level to 3,000 feet above sea level. And about halfway up, she discovered she'd forgotten her figs and left them at the bridge. The service was full, several people in it. And the conversation was faster than my Arabic could pick up, but I realized we had a problem, and the service stopped and said, this sweet lady has left her figs at the bridge. We must turn around and go back. Oh, I don't know, how far is it? 30 miles? So we had to go back 15 miles back and back. No extra charge, no extra fee, because somebody had forgotten a bag of figs. American buses, taxis. Culture is a fascinating thing. I was always intrigued at Palestinian or Syrian or Egyptian or Jordanian or Lebanese parents, families, who are hesitant to send their children to America to college because America is such a violent society. I find that kind of a fun juxtaposition of perspective and values. I've spent many hours with people trying to convince them that Provo, Utah would be a safe place for their children to come to school, that it wasn't what they saw on the evening news suggesting this violent society that we live in. It's interesting because when I go there, I was in Cairo recently, and people say, aren't you afraid to go to that violent world? I say, well, not as much as to go to Los Angeles. It's a perspective issue. It's a value question. It's a way of looking at the world. It's interesting why Mormons might have a problem with Islam. After all, it's a religion that claims a post-New Testament prophet. It claims revelation, a very troublesome sort of concept in terms of a book of scripture. Multiple wives are part of the history, personal relationship with God rather than the formal intercession of a priest. A whole bunch of things that really make it difficult for us to buy into in terms of a religious tradition. You know, the similarities are overwhelming, and it's fun to live in that world and see that. Health code, for example, fasting. One semester I was teaching at the University of Jordan during Ramadan, and it did come to our, in the winter season where the period was a little less than in July, and it wasn't quite so hot either, so it was a little easier. But I remember one day when the students were, I was teaching a graduate seminar that met in late afternoon for 3 hours, and with the end of the day, it was an awkward timing. And we debated as to what we would do about it. And my proposal was that I fast during Ramadan for this month. And that we maybe would have to let out class a little bit early for my benefit and theirs, but that we would all be fasting so that there would be no disadvantage. And so a shared perspective. It was a wonderful spiritual experience for me to go through Ramadan. It was, I don't know, what would it have been, 3 years ago maybe? I think it was in December, January or something. And so I fasted during that time, and it was a very powerful experience. It was an enjoyable encounter with my own spirituality, with my own sense of who I am, to participate in this with them, with the students. And then, you know, again, you can never, you're always in debt, because at the end of every class, I was invited to one of their homes for the meal, which is a wonderful meal as you take the dates and the water in preparation for the meal. It is a very powerful experience. So I guess I'm pleading for a more open world, a more understanding world, a world where we look at fundamentalism or extremism, and where we in Mormon culture are troubled when the world lumps us together with Mormon fundamentalists or extremists, and we find that they're being narrow and they're being bigoted and they're being limited in their analysis. And yet we do the same thing all the time in terms of Islam, in terms of and I don't like the term fundamentalist. That suggests a kind of fidelity to principle. I think extremist is a word where people take a good concept and turn it into a perverted kind of notion or interpretation, as many people do, and as many Christians do. It's troublesome when I go to a country, to Jordan or Egypt, and somebody says, gee, your church says that Muhammad was of the devil. I say, my church? They say, yes, or Reverend Falwell. Who? Franklin Graham. Or Pat Robertson. Somebody who says, who has made some very disparaging remarks. And when we hear someone that may not have any legitimate jurisdiction speaking, we have an attribution process that generalizes beyond any legitimate approach. And other parts of the world do that too, and lump us with that sort of religious movement in Christianity that is very troublesome and is seen as very demeaning to Islam. And it is demeaning to Islam. But it doesn't come from my value system. And it doesn't come from most of yours, but it does come from somebody's. And so understanding those differences, I think, is an important part of the process. Well, I applaud Tariq in terms of his comments on Islam. I appreciate his perspective. I value that perspective. Would that more of us could understand a kind of larger view, a kind of value system that was inclusive rather than exclusive, that didn't assume that because we think we're right in one arena that everybody else is by definition wrong. Extremist Muslims do that, and extremist Mormons do that, and extremist Christians do that. There's a plea, there's a desperate need for love, for peacemaking, for an understanding of the world, and I would hope that this session might contribute to that process. Thank you.
We have a few minutes for questions. If you'd like, you're welcome to come up to the front to field your question, or would you like to come up? Or I can repeat them.
I just wanted to make a comment, and that is that one of the early leaders of the church made this statement. He said that the Prophet Muhammad's mission was to save the world from idolatry. And as far as I can see, he did just that.
Yes, here.
I'd like to thank both of the speakers for their information on Islam, and I'd like to shift a little bit to Utah and growing up in Utah, and I'm assuming you have children and perhaps even now grandchildren. Can you tell us maybe a story of your children or perhaps yourself, maybe a bit more personal story about growing up in Utah, and then if you do have children, where are they now, and were they able to continue the same kinds of commitment to Islam that you have shared with us today?
My son, when he was very young, just in first, second grade and so forth, came home, and this is a story she likes. I said, son, well, you went all the way to school and see, what did you learn? Oh, you say, I learned that 10 and 10 is 30. I say, 10 and 10 is 30? It's not 30, it's 20. And he said, oh, I guess I didn't learn anything today. It's not easy living here, surrounded by church, with all their very good intention. I never doubted that. They want to convert you. And we have neighbors, please let them come to our Boy Scout, this and that. And I told them the following. I say, suppose you and your family are in Cairo, Amman, Baghdad, Damascus, and are all Muslims, and you are just one, two Muslim, Mormon families. If I come to you and I ask you, let your children come to our little mosque and our activities and so forth, it is good for them, would you allow them? And he said, frankly, I don't know. Then after that, they didn't, but you had very good relation with them. I always thought my best friends were good Mormons and bad Mormons. The middle one, they're not sure, they kept away. Maybe they say, oh, this all confuses us. The bad didn't care, and the good wanted to know what makes you tick, who are you? Why are you bringing your things? So it was very cordial and good relation with the higher intelligent, the one who used the mind and think and so. And those who traveled, they were very much open-minded. I remember Sherman Lloyd, I just mentioned to Dr. Ritchie that he wrote an article many years ago, and he said those who visited the Middle East and stayed with the Arabs, they become poor. Arabs and Muslims. It is the one who never seen and done is who are those people and so forth. Because when you see reality, maybe some of the good characters he mentioned, they are maybe bad ones because the country going through turmoil. But in Utah, I raised my children reminding them that they are Muslims and we are surrounded by Christians, but this religion we believe, they believe in Jesus, we love Jesus, we mention Jesus in our prayer. In fact, the power we put on Jesus, we don't put in Muhammad, that he could cure the dead, bring the sick, cure the sick, bring the dead. I mean, we believe in that, and we believe in virgin birth. A lady was talking just when I came a couple of hours ago, he says, if you don't believe in Jesus, then nothing will matter. Muslims do believe. So we are actually closer to the Christian than the one who don't believe, and so forth. But I did go try to attend, because children are sensitive. They don't want to be different. Their names don't want to be different. Their friends. And my daughter, when she was 10, 11, she put a scarf on, and some kids sit behind her, try to pull it. It was a little bit difficult. She was the only one in Highland Park School, and so forth. I attended them when there was a seminar in Denver, in different things, Muslims get together, I go there and I tell them continuously, TV, anytime something came, do that, I say, this is bad, we don't want this, see, this is one part of it, the other part is this and that. They grow up to be okay. There are our Muslims, was difficult or maybe something, all of them, four children, married, I arranged for their marriage. They graduated all, president of university in the commencement, priest, we say Kurdi family, because they all studied, all finished, and they doing okay. I don't know how my grandchildren will be, but that's their responsibility.
I think we have time for just one more short question. How about right here?
Yeah, it's not short. So.
Okay. Anyone else? Right here. Sure. If you do, you want me to repeat it, or would you like to?
My question is: Would a non-Muslim living in a country that is that uses Sharia law be judged by Sharia law? Would they need to live within the requirements of, am I pronouncing Sharia right? Okay. And also, oh, that's enough.
Sharia means what, as we believe it, God revealed, follow Quran. And again, in the media, they make a big thing. This is what they want to go by it, and it's so cruel and so on. It is really, when you study it, it is not. And especially in Egypt, there have been many, many Christians. They do want Islam to be implemented. They do want to be honest and fair and good, and there be fighting drugs and families be actually the Christians living in Muslim country, in Jordan, probably the Khdarachi, they do their, and I don't want to be offensive or saying their moral, it is not Hollywood, it is very much Islamic. There was an incident in Salt Lake City, there was a girl and so forth, the brothers, they didn't want her to go and play around and so forth. Those are the Christian. Christian, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, it was in media and so on and so forth. But to answer your question, no. For a Christian, for a Jew to live there, they have their own rules and regulation. Their churches will be free, their life, their marriage, and so forth. And just like I feel in the United States, I perform marriage, they go bring the license, then whatever I say, I take it back, it will be registered. and in some places they have Sunday their holiday and so forth. So as far as I could, and there isn't any Muslim country that really they implementing Sharia and Islam right now, but they have this fear about it which shouldn't be founded.
I want to thank Mr. Kargai and Dr. Ritchie for speaking to us today. In this world, we need a lot more understanding between these different cultures. I know that as being associated with the LDS faith, I would certainly like to have more understanding of our culture from those who are without, and I would like to extend the same to our Muslim brothers and sisters. So I applaud everybody who's come out to this session today, and I hope that we can all work towards greater understanding in this way. So thank you once again. Let's give a hand to Dr. Ritchie and Mr. Kargai.
Thank you.